From Homestand Sports, this is Day Games. Day Games wants to thank our sponsor, HelloFresh. Forget takeout, HelloFresh delivers all the ingredients for delicious, healthy meals anyone can prepare at home in less than 30 minutes. Go to HelloFresh.ca and use promo code ANTIKA50 to get 50% off your first order. HelloFresh is on a mission to bring cooking back into our lives, with real, whole ingredients that are healthier and we can feel good about. They do all the shopping, planning, and deliver step-by-step recipes and their ingredients so we can relax and enjoy all there is to love about cooking. They plan, they shop, you cook. Go to HelloFresh.ca and use ANTIKA50 to get 50% off your first box. Hello and welcome to Day Games. Day Games is a podcast where we speak to people that work in and around professional baseball in an effort to better understand the daily lives of those working in the game that we all love. We'll be asking them what it takes to do their jobs day in and day out, and the different challenges that exist in working in different parts of the baseball world. My name is Mike Son, and I'll be your host. During my day job, I work as an ergonomist, a scientist who studies how people work. In my spare time, I write about how muscle fatigue influences baseball pitchers. My goal is to talk to those who work in baseball, find out how they got into their jobs, and how they solve their everyday problems and excel in their roles. Today on Day Games, we have Kyle Bodie from Driveline Baseball. Kyle is the founder and director of research and development at Driveline, located just outside Seattle in Washington State. Full disclosure, Kyle has close to what I would consider to be my dream job, doing baseball research with professional pitchers and swearing profusely on social media. Kyle was in Toronto for a coaches conference, bringing his brand of data-driven pitcher training to some of Canada's best young pitching coaches. How many miles per hour can I be expected to gain on my fastball just from doing this podcast?
Yeah, for the podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, at least, 5 to 10. Results not guaranteed, you know,
okay,
but
so
yeah.
Guaranteed? I heard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So Kyle is one of the leading experts in data-driven training for pitching. He's very good at making graphs that make sense to baseball players and baseball fans alike. Now, Kyle, you've received a lot of attention recently, especially from Vin Scully, because you're one of the leading experts with the weighted baseballs. So how did you get involved with weighted baseballs and using those as a training tool for your pitchers?
Yeah, about 8 to 10 years ago, we got into really rehabilitating some pitchers. When I pitched as a younger kid, I had a ton of shoulder injuries, and really getting into coaching youth baseball was more about keeping them healthy, getting into it. So I downloaded a ton of medical journals on baseball. I studied economics, so I wanted to take some sort of scientific approach to it. And quickly realized that there was really nothing in the medical literature that had good prescriptions on how to keep younger kids healthy. So I had run into some literature from Dr. Kupta Ren from the University of Hawaii, who recommended weighted baseball training for adolescent and older athletes, and that had really did build velocity, but more importantly, subjectively, the people felt quite a bit better. And then through physical therapy, the use of weighted implements is a decades-old tradition for rehabbing elbows and shoulders. So I figured we could probably port that over on a regular basis, and that's kind of how we got started.
So nowadays, with the off-season in full swing and you've got all your pro arms in there, what does a day in the life look like right now?
Yeah, on an average day, the pro guys will come in. We have anywhere up to about 13 people in a single group. If they're new, you know, we take them through all the mobility screens, our mobility, stability type screens, maybe use surface EMGs, biomechanics lab, depending on where they're at in their throwing progression. Obviously, if they aren't ready to throw full tilt, we won't go that in detail with them. We try to collect as much data as we can on them. From that, you know, we compare it to our database of pitchers plus the ones that we've collected nationwide and kind of develop a program for them. So we have a generic shell where 60% of it is the same for everybody, but the other 40% is modified around their limitations and corrective exercises and where they're at in their career. You know, if they're a little bit older and willing to expose themselves to more risk to get back into or accelerate their development in pro ball, then we'll go there. If they're a current big leaguer, high prospect like a Tyler Glass now, we'll stay a little bit more conservative with them.
I mean, at that point, he's already shown that he's got the stuff to really
be on the big league radar. So yep. I guess you're trying to just maintain that and make sure that you keep him healthy.
Exactly. Yeah, Tyler's the number one prospect for the Pirates and has pitched only about 20 innings in big league ball, but he's there. And so for him, velocity is not the factor. You know, he can routinely touch 100. So for him, it's more about command and staying healthy and knowing what he can do. So that's where tools like TrackMan and Rapsodo really come into play.
So if you follow Kyle on Twitter, he has written a lot of blog posts about these tracking tools. So Rapsodo is a new piece of hardware that's radar and optical at the same time. It's got cameras and the radar system to track spin on the ball, track velocity. How close do you think we are from this being a part of every prospect's scouting package, having their spin rates and all these really fine data included?
I think we're anywhere from 3 to 5 years. Rapsodo is very price efficient. About a year ago, it was completely unusable, and a year later, through some improvements and really just analyzing the data from us, they've done a good job of making iterative development, and it's every bit as good as TrackMan. We've published validation studies on our blog to that effect, and it's really exciting because it's 10% the price of TrackMan. So with the price always going down over time and the availability of it increasing, I think you'll see area scouts with it and it installed in amateur leagues like the Cape Cod League very soon.
Awesome. That's very exciting for the nerds like myself who are just dying to get their hands Absolutely. On their hands on any form of data.
Yep.
Now you're working with the pro guys. That's a lot of the attention. How much time do you spend during your week working with the high school guys that are trying to, you know, get into colleges or even get into the pros?
We have a pretty small amateur from a high school perspective. How many clients we take from high schools is fairly low. I would say it's less than 20. So not that much. There's a couple geographic reasons for it. Our main competitors service summer ball, select ball, so they're kind of in an all-in-one inclusive package. So they're playing games year-round and training year-round. So to break from that mold is tough for a lot of local high school kids. So for that reason, we just don't have a ton of high school kids. Nationally, we have probably more high school kids that travel to us than we have in the local Pacific Northwest area, which is pretty funny. Yeah.
Now, you also have the Driveline U program, which is where you have people training remotely. What does that look like for your time commitments, and how much are you hands-on, or I guess hands-on laptop, on video
sure.
with those types of clients?
You know, very little, fortunately. The Driveline U program is fully autonomous and run by our lead throwing guy, Matt Daniels. He basically has taken over all of the amateur throwing development and some of the pro development, and he's done an outstanding job. He was employee number one, been with us company from the beginning, and he's done a great job. So he actually handles all of that. Kind of my job title day to day is the director of research and development. So I'm the founder and the president, but that doesn't really describe what I do. So I really manage the R&D team, and I let Matt really do all the throwing development, and I handle the pros.
I often think whenever I hear like research and development teams, did you ever see that show, was it The Ultimate Warrior, where it was on like
no.
History Channel? Well, they'd, like,
oh, wait, yeah,
they'd
yeah.
talk about like a ninja versus a Western gunslinger.
Yes,
and
yes.
They do, like, and there was one episode where they're like, an advanced computer program, and the guy just starts scrolling through Excel super fast. So that's basically what's happening there. We've got scrolling through Excel.
Yeah.
Very, very quickly.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, we try to use not Excel that much, but yeah, it's really not any different. You know, scrolling through MATLAB, if you want to see that, but yeah. Yeah.
And you've got to put on the hacker music, too, whenever you're doing
absolutely.
This in the background. The, yep. the really
black screen,
tech.
Green text.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Typing at 500 words per minute.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Nothing making any form of sense.
No, yeah, writing it all in C. Everything is in an obscure language. Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned Matt Daniels. He's your employee number one. What's the staffing looking like at Driveline? How many people work for you?
We have about 16 people altogether.
Okay.
The people that work at the facility, either part-time or full-time, is about 12. Most are full-time. And so we have trainers, physical therapists, manual therapists. We also have my research assistant works full-time there. And then we have an engineer who works full-time on kind of developing new products and kind of making sure that the current products we sell are holding up, does quality assurance. So, and then Mike, the CEO, who I sold 40% of the company to, handles all of the executive functions. So I gave up the CEO title to him.
Okay, so you're not the the research and development and human resources.
Exactly, yeah. He can do all the tax work and hiring employees and managing the health insurance.
And discipline, employee discipline. I imagine that comes in the form of paintball guns.
You know, the landlord banned him after when we renewed our lease. So the landlord, that was a big condition, is no drone flying. So Trevor was bummed, and no paintballing. So that's a bummer. We're lucky enough to have a really tight-knit staff. Discipline has not actually been an issue because we give so much autonomy to our employees. You know, we give them the chance to create what they need. We have general guidelines on what we want done, and then we let them surprise us with how they want to do it. And honestly, it increases buy-in, and it's great.
And I mean, if you're looking for creative new ways to actually, you know, train players, and that sounds like the best way to go about it.
Absolutely. You know, the only rule that we have, the hard fast rule that we have, is that everything's got to be written down. You know, we really want to be as data-driven as possible. So 3 months from now, when a guy like Jeremy Guthrie, who just started with us, you know, he's trying to get back to the big leagues, three months, 3 years, whatever it is, whatever he did, I want to know kind of the progression that he has and what can we learn from that down the line. And that's really the biggest difference that we make, I think, on a daily basis.
Is he bringing all of his Jordan collection with him?
I think, yeah, no, I don't think so. I would hope not. Yeah, that's a heck of a lot of shoes. I've seen it.
You're going to need a lot of more warehouse space there.
It's very impressive, but no, I don't think so. Yeah.
So you're at 16 now. Maybe give people an idea of what the history looked like from when you decided that you were going to go out on a limb, start a baseball facility, and grow the company.
Yeah, I partnered, you know, I was training two athletes in my gym. My townhome garage, up in North Seattle, and it was just me. You know, we were incorporated just for tax purposes because I was losing a ton of money on the business. So I figured I should figure out how to write it off. From there, we partnered with a local kind of a select team, summer team. Used their facilities. I had about a 300 square foot weight room that we had. I managed that, and then helped manage their facility. Moved on to a bigger summer team called Rips, where I was like the lead throwing pitching trainer, and managed one employee who I have later hired and is now our gym manager. And then from that was about 5 years of kind of being in the red, or, you know, just losing money and getting my feet under me and getting clients, but all the time collecting as much data as possible. I knew that would be the most valuable thing I could do, developing the databases and the process in which I wanted to study things. And then when I got a chance to open up my own facility in Puyallup, that was a really big step forward for us. It was only about 2,000 square feet, but it gave us the first chance to be successful on our own. And that's when I brought on Mike, the CEO. And he honestly has been more responsible for the company's success over the last 2 years than I have been, because he's given it some structure, some understanding, driving projects forward, getting things on a timeline. Just the stuff that I used to do at my previous job. I used to be a manager to that effect, but I'm very clearly the technical and idea guy right now. Yeah. So we divorced the responsibilities, and it's been great. And so that's kind of where we're at. We're in Kent, Washington now. We have about 4,500 square feet for our place, and then we have a warehouse that's 2,500 square feet in the same complex that does all of our shipping, our internet sales. And that's where we're at now. It's a pretty amazing trajectory.
That's it's very impressive to see, like, anybody who can, you know, tough out those first 5 years and keep the vision moving forward, that this is going to work out and this is the right way to do things, because the way you guys do things, it's probably the right way, but it's definitely not the fast way, and it's not the easy way, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, then that's the big thing with the internet, right? You can have search engine optimization and you can do all these tricks and sales, and we're very well known for not putting things, we put things on sale when they're new, and then that's it. We never put them back on sale. We try to be very consistent with our marketing. We give away as much as we can for free, because just getting the idea out there, we think is the best marketing strategy. So just building the best mousetrap is number one, and then telling people it's the best mousetrap is number two. But most people start with number two before they do number one, because it's too hard the other way around.
It's the best mousetrap. It has Cheese Whiz in it. It's like,
right, exactly.
And get whapped by it.
Right, yeah. People haven't really done a good effort. And that's frustrating in any industry, but I think baseball, unfortunately, is more prone to that, where people kind of make more outlandish claims because, frankly, theories are hard to test when it comes to exercise science, as you know.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, no, it is. There's a great article on the 538 called Science is Hard.
Yeah.
And science is really damn hard.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's just something that our society doesn't value right now. You know, it's very much a 4-hour work week, what you did for me lately, how can I optimize, very optimized-driven society we live in, and science doesn't follow those rules, and it never will. The asymptomatic, I mean, the asymptotic nature of science means the more that we learn, the harder the difficulty curve becomes until it flattens out, and you know that's where we're rapidly getting to in all fields, and so we just need to respect that.
Yeah, and probably the best analogy I ever heard was, if you think about doing research, it's a big circle, and the outer ring of the circle is human knowledge, all of human knowledge, and then you start in the center of it, and that's your grade school, and then you go out, and that's high school, and then university gets very close to filling up that circle, where that's everything you could learn. But then when you do research, you're just kind of putting a little tiny little dent in the side of that circle to expand it further. But you're essentially setting a world record every time you, right. you do science, because yeah. you're learning something that's never been learned before, or you're trying to actually come up with something new like that. So
that is a very inspirational way to think about it. That, yeah. that makes me feel much better.
I'm just looking at the whiteboard over there, and it says Kevin Kennedy, one of our producers of Day Games, wrote, don't let the fuckers get you down.
Yep.
So don't let the fuckers get you down when it comes to science.
No, there's lots of them, as we both know.
Yeah. Oh, man. The fuckers are abundant. I'm just going to say this. This is the first time swearing and recording it, and my God, it's liberating.
Yeah. I'm sure it is. Yeah. It is baseball. There is a lot of swearing.
Yeah. You got to swear just to really get the point across.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah.
So looking back on what you're saying about the development of the company, and now that you're the director, you're the founder originally, but you're the director of research now, was there a point in time where you felt like the business part of the gig was kind of weighing you down, and you know, hiring Mike really kind of liberated you to go back to really drive the company forward?
Absolutely. Yeah, about 2 years ago, we started making different types of weighted balls because the current ones on the market were just insufficient for our needs. It really wasn't a profit-grabbing thing. I never thought we would be a retail company, but that's actually where the majority of our profits come from now. Mm-hmm. So I was quickly managing a retail business and running the gym 60 hours a week and being the director of R&D, and we had no employees. So, it became a headcount issue first and foremost. So there were things like just not paying taxes. I just wasn't doing that because... So Mike coming on, the first time he came on, he said, "Oh, what have you done?"
President doesn't pay taxes in your country.
That's true. But he may legally not pay taxes, potentially. Okay. You know, I was illegally not paying taxes. There was a big difference. So Mike cleaned a bunch of stuff up, and it really liberated me. Now I could work 60, 80 hours a week on the stuff that I wanted to. And then because of that, you know, the business's growth just accelerated. His you know, work getting the shit together, honestly, shipping products on time, having quality assurance standards, those types of things. And then he could focus 60 hours a week on that. I could focus 60 hours a week on research and hiring new gym managers and things like that. And through the combined efforts of both of us, we've grown the company, I think about 500% since he's come on. I think that's probably understating it. I think the company's actually 10 times the revenue that it's worth, or the 10 times the market cap since he's come on.
And could you have ever envisioned that? Was that like the...
No, the whole goal in this, which is funny, in the car right over here, the whole goal of starting Driveline Baseball was to prove that my stuff worked. And then I wanted to sell myself into Pro Bowl. I wanted to become a pitching coordinator.
Yeah.
And I worked for the Astros, and I worked for the Dodgers and Padres part-time. But none would really give me a full-time job. You know, I said I'll work for $60,000 a year. You know, I'll just come in. I was ready to relocate my family. And honestly, nobody had any interest. And by the time they had interest and were willing to offer me a full-time job, it was too late. My company was already making enough money, and there was enough traction that I couldn't give it up. So honestly, I can't. I never thought that I would do it. When I interviewed with Andrew Friedman, who was then the GM of the Rays, Andrew approached me, and he said, "You know, why do you want to work in Pro Bowl? Like, why don't you just do your own thing and make a ton of money?" And I said, "Well, I just don't think in Pro Bowl. I don't think that's an option." I said, "I think if I demonstrate that I can do the right thing, and that my players get better, and I bring something to the table that Pro Bowl doesn't have, that a team would be smart enough to snap me up and hire me." And it shows what I know. Like, Pro Bowl was not smart enough to do that. And Andrew and I still actually have a great relationship with the Dodgers, but It was very interesting to see it go to this level. I didn't think it would ever get to this point.
Is that the appeal to authority fallacy, I think, in the philosophical sure. terms? Where,
yeah.
They've got to be smart enough to,
yeah.
to know this is the smart way to build.
Yeah, I met with Andrew probably 8 years ago, and or 9 years ago. Yeah, it's something about that. And the Moneyball revolution had really come about. Andrews had been doing really well with the Rays. Theo Epstein, obviously, with the Red Sox. And Chris Antonetti and Mark Shapiro, now with the Blue Jays, but then with the Indians. And I just thought there's so many smart people now, and they have to see the quantification of player development. That's got to be coming. And so who better than me to represent that? And honestly, it just took a lot longer than I thought. So, yeah.
And there's still resistance to it now.
No doubt about that. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Now, if you were to kind of describe what working in pro ball would be like for one of these types of people, what does their kind of job look like, one of these people that are trying so hard to break through to these managers and general managers?
Yeah, you know, so people that are in there like an entry-level employee analyst, when it comes to player development, it's ultimately really frustrating, right? Because unless everybody in the player development side is on board with an analytical approach, you're not going to see a lot of progress. So you have these entry-level coaches, analysts who are really only getting a chance with people that players that honestly they're probably going to cut. And coaches don't trust nerds, you know.
Yeah.
So they're already poisoning the players against an analytical approach. And players themselves may not necessarily appreciate kind of a data-driven approach. Although, over time, it's definitely changing. It's just about getting into the right organization and being empowered, which unfortunately a lot of GMs and front office people are afraid to give entry-level employees authority, which yeah. is not our philosophy at all.
And, you know, we were talking about it on the car ride over here with, you know, people who are so-called experts in mechanics and refusing to ever put a number to something.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, by definition, that's what mechanics are. It's
right.
the quantification of, yep. of movement, right?
In some sort, right? If,
yeah.
whether it's your standard inverse kinematics kind of approach
yep.
with a kinetics calculation or the more recent four dynamics analysis, you know, popularized by Dr. Buffy and Dr. Werner.
Yeah.
How do we go about that? But, you know, and what does that mean? What's the correlation to disabled list days and stuff? And that's why I think, you know, being able to put our minds together on the fatigue stuff and the four dynamics, I think will yield some pretty interesting results. Who knows if they'll be actionable, but it'll
yeah.
definitely be interesting.
And I think that's the other thing that people don't necessarily understand is that when you do work in sports science or exercise science or whatever, you spend a lot of the time screwing stuff up.
Absolutely.
Like, you spend a lot of time being wrong.
Absolutely. Like, more time being wrong. Than,
yeah. yeah. I mean, like, of all the 10 ideas you have, maybe 2 of them actually pan out or something.
That would be a great ratio. yeah.
But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like you have to test these theories.
Yep.
And if there's nothing there, then there's nothing there. But sometimes a null finding is as big as an actual finding,
no
a
doubt.
Significant finding.
Yeah, being able to publish null and negative results is really important, and
yeah.
something that I think is unfortunately overlooked today. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and replication, too.
No doubt.
And having...
yeah, replication and validation are not fun, but are very important.
but
yeah.
very important,
yes.
yeah. And it's like that's what you're doing with the TrackMan
yes.
stuff. And, you know, realistically, what you're doing there is you're empowering a bunch of other coaches that may be in other places to adopt the same type of data-driven approach and actually quantifying
no doubt.
Things.
And yeah, that'll be great for baseball in general, but then it also selfishly serves our business because if more people are taking a data-driven approach and we're leading that, then we like our chances on everybody unifying and kind of adopting some sort of standard. And that's my dream in 2 to 5 years that we have some sort of unified data collection standard with some sort of device and whatever that is. Who knows what it'll be, but... hopefully that's something we can kind of approach as the years go by.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. So, totally off the cuff, let's design this study to do a unified approach with the
sure.
studying it. So, have you played around with like the Kinect for motion capture at all?
Kind of a funny, an interesting part on that is I was actually part of Project Natal at Microsoft.
Okay.
So, which was then what they called the Kinect.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd actually helped design and test and validate the Kinect.
Okay.
And it was really exciting, kind of like what happens with current baseball products, which I won't use their names, but the marketing department very much oversells the engineering capabilities of the Kinect. you know, they said it will be perfect one-to-one tracking and fields of depth,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm looking at the Kinect and I'm saying, I'm looking at Project Natal and saying, it can't do that, it never will do that. Also, that's not a video game hard problem, that's a computer vision hard problem.
Yeah.
so
yeah, yeah.
But it's come a long way. The new Kinect I think is really cool in combination with other types of software that are out there, like Kitman Labs and a few others.
Yep.
And I think the real value of it is not from high-speed motion capture, because it only shoots at 60 hertz.
Right.
But I think a lot of value of it is in depth of field and measuring range of motion. Mm-hmm. So you could lay people on a table, have the Kinect in the same spot. You can measure kind of external rotation, internal rotation, or, you know, that motion. It's not really external rotation necessarily. It's the, you know, factoring in torsion and stuff.
But
measuring that motion arc, I think, is really something the Kinect can do really fast with much less error than a human can. So I think those are the real applicable things for it.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the mechanics of pitching, what are some of the red flags you're looking for? In coach speak, I guess.
Some of the stuff that has been said, not all of it, but a lot of the stuff that's been said is really applicable if you just kind of quantify it, right? So
totally,
precision and repeatability of release point is a big factor when it comes, is a strong signal for command.
Right.
And so the way that you could quantify that would be using like the standard deviation of horizontal and vertical release point using TrackMan.
Mm-hmm.
And so we found through training with weighted baseballs and other proprioceptive ideas that the standard deviation, the variance of release point actually goes down significantly. We did a study with a MLB team that sent seven other players here for a 5-week intensive weighted ball program. And their vertical release and horizontal release slot standard deviations were much lower after 5 weeks. On the vertical side, the p-value was basically zero. It was like 0.0001. And then on the horizontal side, it was a perfect p-hacked 0.048. So it was below 5.
That sounds great.
It actually, I didn't even hack it. I promise it was right below 5. But I mean, it showed that there was a significant difference. So that's a big factor.
Right.
Things like lead leg stiffening, lead leg straightening, blocking, which Dr. Fleissig deduced over 20 years ago, I believe, is extremely important. Being able to create ground force in the direction of the mound, basically pulling yourself backward, is really important. That was kind of confirmed using force plate analyses. Dr. Fleissig confirmed it with motion capture, and then we kind of confirmed it from a more kinesiological standpoint than a biomechanical standpoint. Like creating force backwards is really important.
Yeah.
Arm action type of stuff is all kind of variable. You know, we haven't really found any particular thing, and that matches what ASMI has found, that there's no real timing mechanism that actually seems to decrease valgus load or UCL stress, depending on what you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of that's all very variable right now, and I think it always will be.
And I think it never will be a
right
cut and dry thing. Like if you think about, you know, Tyler Glasnow,
mm-hmm,
and you compare him against, say, Marcus Stroman,
sure,
a hometown boy here,
yep,
in Toronto, those are two very, very different bodies.
Yes.
And both have to do things in a very different manner to generate velocity and generate their command. So I don't think you're ever going to be able to say there's one red herring of this is a mechanical flaw that's going to hurt everybody.
Right, especially when you start thinking about what we talked about on forward dynamics. What is the individual musculature underneath it?
Yeah.
What are the anatomical limitations? And those are the things that are frankly overlooked by the current gurus, you know, or
yeah,
not even overlooked, just not even, they don't even know about them. That would be the more accurate way to say it.
And I think like one of the more inspiring things that comes from you and following you on Twitter and following your blog and stuff like that is the ability to say, like, oh yeah, I was totally wrong.
Yeah.
I went down the wrong
absolutely
path here. And I would say, you know, somebody who's now spent a year in the pitching Twitter community and tried to interact with people, the biggest thing that doesn't exist are people saying when they were wrong or admitting, hey, you know what, I originally thought that was the way to go. And at the same time, people holding them super accountable for when they make something,
sure,
and make a mistake, and not realizing that, hey, yeah, you can screw up, but just let's regroup and go back down that road. With your guys, how much do you find you have to kind of put the idea that it's okay to be wrong, that it's okay to screw up and we're trying to get better in their head when all they hear is, you know, this razor thin line of, mm-hmm, you could get cut at any time.
Yeah. I think that the Twitter following and being open about that on the blog really sets the tone, because we don't accept 100% of the clients that write in that want to train at our facility. You know, we actually cut quite a few of them. We don't take any trainee, which I think is a misconception. I think people think our training fees barely break even on the business. This way we could be a little bit more selective.
Mm-hmm.
So when we hire employees or bring in new clients, they're so familiar with the material online that they know that part of what they're doing at our facility is kind of a glorified science experiment. You know, they know in an 80-20 realm that 80% of the stuff that we're training them on, we feel very good about. It has been validated enough, and, you know, I certainly could be wrong on that. I'm not saying that I'm right, but I feel good enough that it'll be a universal thing we work with most of the players on.
Yep.
And then 20% of it is honestly experimental and testing and something that I don't think is going to hurt them, but, you know, we need to learn something new. And no better way to do it than the population we have. We have what most research scientists would, you know, consider a dream, you know, clientele.
Oh,
we have tons of professional
yeah.
athletes willing to subject themselves to invasive testing.
Yeah.
And so that just gives us a huge pool of data that we can draw from.
And I mean, I remember somebody trying to troll Trevor Bauer on Twitter, and he mentioned something about having one of the strongest arms in the world. And you think about it, it's like, okay, he's pretty up there in velocity, but what percentage of the population can generate that type of a pitch velocity or that type of arm speed? Like, you are working with a very, very awesome population to
yeah.
understand these things.
Yeah, it's tremendous. Yeah, and so it's a huge opportunity that those types of players would never go to an ASMI, they would never go to a lab, or if they do, they wouldn't be in peak condition. And
right.
so being able to have professional athletes at the peak of their performance is a rare opportunity for us, and we need to capitalize on that, not from a profit perspective, but from a research perspective. We're getting data that literally no one else can collect.
Yeah, and that goes for a lot of the labs out there, sports
sure.
science labs. So that relationship between you, your Twitter following, your pitchers, and the scientists in the community, it really is something that's going to advance the field of understanding how people do get injured.
And I think if just pushing that mentality, I think it's starting to spread to more facilities. You know,
yeah.
there are more people out there that are interested in it, and my goal is to empower them. You know, I had to build my own lab from the ground up. I used Dr. Fleissig's dissertation to figure out how to do DLT and all that.
Yeah.
And how can we develop some sort of product or just some sort of unified way to get data from everybody, even at the lowest level, just velocities and ranges of motion and stuff like that, and then go from there. And if we can just get people in the habit of collecting the data, then they'll be much more receptive to a more invasive test.
Yeah. So you've collected data on a ton of pitchers in every realm. Has there ever been something that totally surprised you, like just totally jumped off the charts and you never saw that coming?
The big thing is the holds that we used to do. So we used to do those weighted ball holds where people would hold the ball and go through their pitching motion. Very popular with Tom House. It's still a current product. It seemed to make a lot of sense. But then when we put it through, you know, biomechanical testing, we noticed the guys are not reaching full external rotation. Guys are really pushing the ball. And honestly, is something that came up today is guys get fatigued really fast. You know, a coach, a very data-driven coach at the conference I'm at right now said guys were just gassed by getting a 2-pound ball and having massive muscle activation, you know, voluntary contraction.
Yeah.
And it speaks to the research you talked about. So I was really excited to bring that up because you have these guys that are getting fatigued in what are supposed to be warm-ups or training.
Yeah.
Training methods.
Yep.
And then they really couldn't even complete that. So then we said, you know, let's get some discrete or some specific things that the holds are supposed to improve. You know, and so the best we could get from the company that promoted them is that it strengthens the shoulder and then strengthens decelerators. So I said, well, that's a number of muscles. You know, that could be
yeah.
bony structures and anything.
Yep.
So we decided to take surface EMG, surface EMG results from just various, like the lat and various other muscles in the shoulder. And we found that just basic rebounder stuff that had been used for decades by physical therapists were just significantly better at activating those areas and did not impose a mechanical constraint that the holds did. So that was honestly, it was a shocking find because we had used holds for over a year before we took them out of the program. And
mm-hmm.
I just said, that's something that we're constantly testing our own things on, and that's the stuff that we got to get better at. And that was the biggest thing that we've taken out of the program in the last few years. Yeah.
Well, that's a good example of, hey, this was wrong.
Yep,
so,
exactly. Yeah, and people that do it, it still works. That's fine, but I mean, we just said that there was an alternative, and the results were just undeniable. So we had to switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's health of your pitcher, then ultimately you do
yep.
whatever's going to...
Absolutely. Yeah, the results were... It was one of those clear, very rare cases in science where the results were just a joke. You know, it was just so significant that subjecting more people to testing was more actually unethical because we knew what the results were going to be. You know?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
At some point in time, yeah, you got to consider the actual...
Right. Most of the time, it's not like that. But that case happened to be so severe that we said, you know, we only needed 14 cases to just make a very strong predictive, you know, result that this was not something we wanted to keep doing.
So what are you dying to know right now? What's your next big burning question that would be
yeah.
best answered by having the most amount of people know about it?
You know, I think real soft tissue analysis is the thing I'm dying to know. Like, what is valgus stress, right? Like, we know what the computed model is, and we know how it interacts with joint compression. But what is there a real good way to actually measure, you know, tension on the UCL? And is there a wearable or something that we can do? And I got to believe that we're not far away from that type of thing. But then that yields questions of what do we even do with that number? I would really like to know that. I think a good way that MLB can get started on that, and which they have, is taking pre- and post-draft MRIs of the elbow. You know, reading an MRI of the elbow is fairly straightforward. Reading an MRI of the shoulder is a mess, obviously. But if all we're looking at is UCL integrity and attachment points, then, you know, we can really do that. And so then from that, we can say, here are the kind of degenerative changes that occur over 5 years of professional baseball. Mm-hmm. And which if any MRI modalities are, you know, actually useful for predicting surgery, or what type of intervention will be useful. Will the Seth Maness primary repair, the Dugas method, work consistently? That's something that's also really interesting. But I'm dying to know more about soft tissue analysis and what's the best way to go about that. And I think the forward dynamics computation is a really good first step.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's going to be like a huge component of that where it's inputting the individual parameters into it and customizing it for each individual pitcher.
Absolutely.
Because as you've seen in your facility, like, every guy is so different. And trying to come back and get the same result is, the people get it in so many different ways.
Yeah, and they come with any number of ridiculous pre-existing injuries that change their anatomy. And Trevor Bauer looks completely different at UCLA than he does now. Do I think his mechanics were better or more conducive for success in college? You know, I happen to believe that. But he was having... He's a great example of a guy who's changed his mechanics for reasons that people don't seem to know. They think he did it for some injury prevention for his arm. Like, he believes in mechanical, and that's not true at all. You know, Trevor was a very triple extension dominant athlete of the rear leg in college. And he has a debilitating case of femoral acetabular impingement. So he has FAI of the rear leg, both hips. And so this constant forcing triple extension with a lateral push was tearing his hip labrum. And so he had to change how he did everything on the lower half just to avoid pain of the hips. Yeah. And that shifted his posture, and it resulted in a lost year in 2013. A very bad performance in AAA in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. And so people think that he's stubborn, or he did it to protect his arm. And the reality is, he could barely get out of his car. He could barely walk. That was the actual reason. And those are the things that people seem not to know, no matter how much he talks about it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, you hear the quote of pitching is not good for you. Inherently.
Yeah.
And if you do it enough, repeatedly over and over again, eventually some things, you know, start to break if it's not a natural movement.
Right. And how do you address that? You know, so many people and gurus online that we both love talk about changing motor patterns. And yet you and I both know, you as an ergonomist, know that people who have brain damage at a late age, just something like 30, some significant percentage of them never learn to walk again because it's so difficult and so frustrating to relearn a motor pattern that has been so imprinted in you.
Yeah.
And so to think that you can, the gait is complicated enough, but focusing on ballistic activity up upwards of 95 miles per hour and meaningfully making changes consciously, that just doesn't happen in adults. You know, that's not a common thing.
No, exactly. But I mean, it is easier to just say nonsense on the internet than it is actually.
Yes, it is. That's what the internet exists for. Nonsense, generally.
The internet has existed for,
yes,
for nonsense and pornography.
Yeah, absolutely. And often a big overlap between the two. Yes. Yes.
The Venn diagram of nonsense and pornography is almost one.
Yeah, it's very strong. The correlation is. Circle. Yeah, the ICC between the two is quite large. Yeah.
Okay, so what's the next step for Driveline?
Expansion, in a sense. So many people think about franchising and ask us all the time if we'll franchise or become a certified program. And this is something that we're not interested in, but we do need to figure out how we can get a certified program into coaches' hands. You know, because people are buying our literature, buying our products, and using them in any number of methods that are things that we would agree with or don't agree with. But more importantly, there's got to be a way that we can get all the data tracked in one database. And that's what excites me. How can we get everybody, you know, contributing to one factor? The 300, 500 athletes we get per year is nothing compared to the thousands nationwide. with well-meaning coaches who just don't have the tools to measure things. And if that's something as silly as the beginning of it using a Modus leaf to track workload, great. That's something, at least, because being
it's
able
a
to
reliable do approach, right?
Right. Yeah,
it's whether
something.
Whether or not you agree with what's coming out of it,
absolutely
it's reliably coming out of it,
exactly.
Then that's something you can
right
work with.
Yeah, the ICC is between the Modus sleeve and the ASMI lab. Between valgus torque is extremely high. It's about 0.95 or better. So we know that it's a reliable measure of valgus torque. Do I happen to think that valgus torque is useful? Not really, but let's get 10,000 cases of it. Let's find out.
Yeah.
Instead of a personal opinion, let's collect a ton of it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, at the end of the day, like, your personal opinion means nothing if
exactly
you can't back it up with some data.
Right, and it's an easy, low-cost way. We could purchase units, send them out to well-meaning coaches and have them check it. We can measure things like chronic versus acute workload, like Dr. Tim Gabbett is studying in rugby.
Yeah.
Can we apply those theories? And really just taking theories from other sports and applying them to baseball. Do they hold up? Because right now we're just beating our head against the wall with baseball. It's inverse kinematics. It's valgus torque. And I'm just saying, that's the stuff we've been studying for 10, 20 years, and it's not predictive at all of injury.
Yeah, if you're not predicting it now, then...
Right. The methodology is great, but, you know, we got to look at something else.
Yeah. And not just dig your heels in when,
right,
you know, this is my idea and I'm going to take it to the...
Absolutely. Yep, exactly.
That's, to build a company and building a company is something to be pretty brave in, and then to challenge the status quo in the field is another step altogether. So that's great where Driveline's going. It's great where it is. And it's very entertaining to see some of the stuff you're doing now with the live at bats. And
that'll be really fun, yeah.
Yeah. For anybody who hasn't followed Kyle on Twitter, it's been recently he's had his pro arms in there going against pro batters, and they're in the batting cage tracking pitches with the Rapsodo.
Yep.
And tracking the pitches or the hitters with the hit tracks.
Yep.
And giving up home runs and having massive celebrations.
It's been a lot of fun. You know, I think that'll be the future. We intend to replace all but the best college summer leagues with that, because we can offer college coaches all have a tough time sending their players out to college summer ball where it's not well controlled. They don't know the competition. So if we can get really good athletes competing against one another, plus the best training atmosphere, we already have that. So can we add that with competitions where these athletes are getting 30 innings and they're getting 100 at-bats indoors on a simulated game and they're getting that competition? Boy, that's going to be, we have a number of college coaches who just are just freaking out. You know, we have over 300 people on the waiting list for college summer ball this year. And we know it's going to be a hit. So if we can broadcast that live, keep stats, collect stress levels and all that in a game situation, which is always higher than a lab situation, man, that's going to be a huge learning opportunity for us and obviously a big product, a big profitability win for us. But we see it more as the latter, because just promoting new research and getting more ideas out there is what drives the company's revenue. It's not the other way around.
All you heard growing up is get away from the video games and get outside. I think you may have just found the way to use video games to advance human understanding of how baseball happens.
Kids have grown up with video games, they've grown up with the internet, so inherently marrying the two, they love it because they love baseball and they love technology. So being able to put them together in a way that engages their competitive sense is just the golden goose. I don't see any other way around it.
So once everybody's out of the lab and you're in there alone, how far have you hit one off the tee and the hit tracks?
That's a good question. I've hit a ball, I think like 400 feet or so with a metal bat. I can hit some home runs. You know, I won the batting title in my adult league a couple years ago. And I can really hit. Yeah.
Not to brag.
Yeah. No, I can hit a little bit. Actually, it's very funny. I'm the lead pitching guy, and I probably barely break 70 because my arm is so messed up. But I can hit, so I supplement it with something else.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Kyle, for doing day games. I've learned a lot, and I think together we can... We're probably going to continue this conversation over a beer sometime.
Absolutely.
I don't think anyone would be completely shocked to hear that starting your own business is a risky and challenging proposition. Now imagine you're trying to begin a completely new and technical spin on an industry that has traditionally shunned modern advancements and prided itself on its deep, rich history. Kyle definitely didn't take the easy road when he started Driveline, but his persistence and ingenuity has resulted in a business that is improving player development while striving to keep pitchers healthier than ever before. With the offseason coming to an end, expect big things this spring from the pitchers that Kyle has trained at Driveline. Now, I have to go and find that guaranteed velocity that Kyle promised me from doing this podcast. Day Games was brought to you by HelloFresh. Delicious, healthy food delivered for you to make in your own kitchen. Use the promo code ANTIKA50 for 50% off your first box, courtesy of your friends here at the Antika Podcast Network and HelloFresh. Day Games is executive produced by me, Dr. Mike Son, and Nick Dyka, with support from Kevin Kennedy and technical production by Natalie Stoberman.